Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio number 471. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Oh, not a heck of a lot there, Kevin. How about yourself?
Well, the trials and tribulations of getting TV installed in the house are finally past us. Somehow, I actually could have watched SmackDown Live on either cable company that I have now. But I chose to watch it on DirecTV. I have learned a few things about their DVR that I did not obviously previously know. But the one thing that really could have been worthy of being rewound and rewatched had I not been pressed for time to watch this or record this program. Becky Lynch is saying to Charlotte, "You bitch," to end the show. You know, it's one of those situations where the WWE does use the swearing, but they've gotten to the point where it's a good balance. Where when people do use it, it truly stands out. And you can certainly understand the situation at hand and why it would be used.
Yeah, I don't really have a problem with swearing. It was very well placed, but once again, if they thought that was going to get anyone to boo Becky Lynch, that they were sadly mistaken. It just made her cooler.
Yeah, I don't know how you solve that problem.
I don't think there is no solution other than a double turn. There's a double turn back, essentially. There really isn't. Becky is just too damn likable. And her motivations are just too damn relatable. We all feel like we get cast over for the company favorite, the family favorite, you know, the whatever, the teacher's pet, or what have you. You know, it's that, you know, living through this fictional character thing that, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin had 2 decades ago.
Right.
Not to that degree, but it is that much. I mean, plus.
Yeah, well, but it's definitely that attitude that Becky is bringing to it. You know, he was kind of fighting the man, and she's kind of fighting the man and a woman in this case.
I'm sure Ashley Flair is a very, very nice person. But Charlotte, the character, has always had an arrogance and an ego to her. She was better as a heel, you know, 2 years or so ago than she's been since she's been a babyface on SmackDown. I do think that people can, and as someone who's actually met Becky Lynch personally, I can say that, you know, she is a genuinely nice person. I think that shines through in the when she's on camera all the time. You know, and once again, the way the whole story was told heading into SummerSlam. This is just a complete misunderstanding of how human psychology works.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I really like Becky Lynch, and that's kind of the thing, is that they were telling that story. And, Charlotte did. I liked her fight back a little bit more this week on the mic, pointing out that, you know, she was just playing within the rules and that Becky would have done the same thing.
Yeah, it was better than her little clap back she did what she did last week when she held the belt up and screamed, for this, and then threw the belt down like it meant nothing, and then Becky just absolutely torched her on Twitter. Like, yeah, for this is what I've worked my whole life for. What are you here for?
So that was I don't know if that was by design to hold off on making the points that she did or not, But I do think that it certainly helps even the playing field a little bit. But I still don't think that, you know, it's going to gain Charlotte any traction. The announcers in Charlotte can point out how fair that was in a triple threat match. But when you have the champion in your finisher, that one's going to sting a little bit more than pretty much any other moment in time, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, no. I mean, Charlotte should not have been in that match. I mean, I know she was, you know, given the opportunity by Paige to enter that match, and she'd be foolish to not accept that. But still, it just doesn't. You know, it just doesn't feel. And don't get me wrong. I had a very sneaky suspicion that they were going to go in this direction before SummerSlam. And I think a lot of us did.
Well,
and we all predicted it wasn't going to work.
I guess the thing that's kind of interesting too, especially after week two of the experiment to try and nail down Becky as the heel, and the crowd completely going bananas for her. Doesn't, at the end of the day, doesn't Becky need a title reign? Like, at some point within this feud?
I believe she does, yeah.
And that's...
Absolutely. She absolutely, you know... She absolutely needs a title reign. She needs to validate everything she said. Or, I mean, since she's a heel, she can be proven to be a liar, I guess. But I think this is where... just not the direction they should have gone. They could have kept Becky Lynch as a babyface champion for a number one a while before you do the Becky won at SummerSlam and eventually build up to a Charlotte turn. Because then you just have... Then Charlotte just loses the title again pretty fairly quickly. And if Charlotte versus Rousey is still the plan for WrestleMania, she's got to win it back again. I think this it would be a lot less messy. I don't know if that is actually the plan or if plans don't change, but
right.
This whole thing would be a lot less messy if you just kept Becky babyface and had her win the title at SummerSlam and hell kept Charlotte out of the damn match.
Yeah, that's what's so confusing in a lot of ways. Like they are, I don't know, because I was thinking about tonight. I'm like, haven't they just stashed Asuka just away in Neverland? Because
she has not made it up. Other than in the dressing room clearing brawl last week with Queen Charlotte and Becky, Asuka has not made an appearance, an official appearance since Extreme Rules.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just one of those things that Charlotte had been out. I think it's obvious that she had some malfunctions. One could say that needed to be fixed, so she couldn't get it back into the ring. You know, it's just like one of those things. Just like hold it off for like 2 weeks. Like you've left Asuka out of it for Lord only knows how long. And I mean, that's kind of the other crazy thing about the women's division on SmackDown. Like I don't know if it is actually deeper than what's on Raw, but you know, it's still another one of those cases where I feel like the SmackDown women consistently get more, or more of them get more time. General.
That's definitely a solid point. And I agree with that. SmackDown has made better use of their women since the beginning of the brand extension. But they've got a major problem with Charlotte.
Oh.
Charlotte has been the focal point of the women's division for about 3 years now. This was a time to get a break from her. I hate to put it like that, but you know, just for it to give her something of a break from being on top, and then they just kind of shoehorned her into this situation that, you know, after Becky had just built up all this momentum, and once again, she is so damn likable, and everyone, you know, she's the type of character that everyone roots for. You know, we've got a... they've got a Roman Reigns situation on their hands.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't go with Roman Reigns, because I don't think people are crapping on Charlotte as much as they are on one Reigns.
No, it's not that point yet, but I mean, there's always, I think, been an undercurrent of, you know, of resentment towards Charlotte from, you know, certain fans, you know, about, you know, being handed everything because of her last name. And they absolutely prove those people's points. Yeah. But you know what? This is the direction they've chosen. Maybe they'll course correct it over the next few weeks, and do a double turn. But on the bright side, Becky Lynch and Charlotte have great chemistry in the ring against each other. So there should be some, finally, now that Carmella was defeated quite handily, and it's going to be back, you know, be pushed back down the card now. You know, for people who were feeling that the quality of the women's matches wasn't what it used to be, well, we got a hell of a match coming.
Yeah, that is the easy fallback with this feud too. Whether they're going their way or not, Becky Lynch is still just destroying promos. Charlotte, like I said, she kind of held up her end of the bargain this week, I feel like. And yeah, you throw in the great matches, and how can you argue? Like you said, it's definitely not a direction I would have gone in. But here we are. So, yeah, it's happening. Since we started on SmackDown and we were talking about the women, we could talk about how, you know, the mixed tag team ranks have swelled on SmackDown Live for some reason. Andrade Cien Almas.
I feel like it was a pretty logical and obvious place to go after SummerSlam to do the husband and wife reality couple mixed tag coming up at Hell in a Cell. I like what they did tonight. Obviously, Miz and Maryse need to get some heat on them, particularly with, you know, between Maryse and Brie Bella. You know, the beatdown was well done. Although, as our good friend and Collins' seating partner Steve Williams pointed out, these scenes like this would be a lot more effective if we weren't being shown all night promos of Miz buying and Miz and his wife happily buying furniture or walking their dog.
Yeah, especially when it airs directly after the show.
Right, yeah. I mean, because Miz is just such a great heel, and Maryse, you know, is right there with him. You know, and then you have this entire, you know, reality show branding of them that needs to position them as really nice people. It does kind of hurt the flow, but once again, Miz is so good and Maryse is so good in their roles. It doesn't hurt that much, but it does to a degree.
Yeah, I am not one to have really turned into Miz and Mrs., but clearly it's doing well enough if they are picking it up for a second season with more episodes.
No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, good for them. It's certainly more money for them, more exposure for them.
Right.
But once again, all the promotion within the body of the show, of them in their real lives, you know, once again, and then you get to their just complete, you know, heel characters in the, you know, once again, within the body of the show, it just, it there's a conflict of interest there.
Yeah. But like you said, it's working for now, and
the show is, it was only a six episode first season, and that sixth episode was tonight, so it is over now.
Right.
We can definitely move forward with this. It's very well. Everything they've done with Miz and Brian, well, maybe like the stuff with the baby doll and that weird thing where Miz played all those videos of babies crying. Maybe those things didn't land as well. But overall, you know, the whole Miz Daniel Bryan storyline has been incredibly strong. You know, adding the wives to the mix was, you know, a natural progression. Even though some people would like to see, would like to see Daniel Bryan in better wrestling matches with indie darlings, but you know what though?
They,
I bet 30 years, this is the match. 30 or so years, this is the match. Bryan and Brie can sit down and show their grandchildren.
So I bet they're
excited about it.
Well, and they just. At this point, that's one of those things that, to me, it should start getting to be a relic. They've got so much programming to fill that you will see those matches at some point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know some people think that there's some kind of grand conspiracy keeping Daniel Bryan back from the top, even though he's only been back since April, and he's, in many ways, still getting his feet back underneath him. I'd be surprised if he's not, you know, or near the title mix by WrestleMania.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of early, but to call him the favorite to win the Royal Rumble would not be, you know, out of league, in my opinion. So yeah, he has plenty of time. Nothing important, really. Honestly, SummerSlam is the last important thing, and they're, you know, the WWE is going to coast until about December, or at least that's their usual MO.
Well, it does feel like they've got, you know, some major-esque shows through the end of the year. I mean, Hell in a Cell is being written, built up pretty well. They're you know, making a big deal out of the Australia show in October. Obviously, they're really pushing Evolution very hard. Survivor Series is a big one. December is always the deadest month. That I won't argue.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't
like
get that.
Up going on to keep things, you know, afloat about through the end of the year.
Yeah, so if someone's complaining about that with Brian so far, like I get, yeah, I don't get it. There hasn't been enough time gone by. If you wanted him in the championship picture, I mean. Consistently, I don't understand why AJ Styles is upset as he is in some of these promos, because wouldn't he have blocked Samoa Joe's number on his wife's phone at this point? I mean, hasn't Joe gone over the line enough that you're like, dude, I know that you're just talking to either A, a recording, or B, nothing, and not be pissed off about the situation.
No, right. I get you, but I do feel that after, with what they did at SummerSlam, that this thing did turn a corner. It does feel like something more personal. It does feel like something that, to me, at least, it is more you know, believable than the original, than this thing started off as. But if they do looks like we're getting an on location skit next week of Samoa Joe invading the Styles family barbecue, which you know what, that could be good. I won't knock it until I see it.
I can dig some of that stuff that takes place out of the ring, like. Because I kind of liked, for NXT, the Velveteen Dream EC3 showdown at the pool. I think it helped kind of fill in their characters outside of the wrestling ring. And having them interact at even a fake picnic for Samoa Joe and AJ Styles will help, to me, it'll help out.
Yeah, I think so too, although, you know, as they are ratcheting up the personal nature of this feud, interesting to note that as of this moment, and it doesn't seem likely that this match will end up in the cell after all, which was a prediction after the, you know, disqualification finish at SummerSlam that most people I believe had.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that they kind of have two different sets of blood feuds going on SmackDown currently. So you got Samoa Joe and AJ Styles for the title belt, and the one that is going to be in a Hell in a Cell is Jeff Hardy versus Randy Orton.
Well, I mean, I get why that's in the cell. I mean, they've done some very, very violent things to each other. So, I mean, for what Hell in a Cell should be, even when you kind of have to force, you know, 2 to 3 matches in the cell, as historically has been at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, you know, they've done a good job with Randy Orton and Jeff Hardy. You know, as I said, rushing up the violence and you know, really making it a blood feud. So, and I think it has been a dream of Jeff Hardy's. He stated it many times, I believe. You know,
right.
It's been a dream of his to do a Hell in a Cell match, and he's going off the top of that damn thing. We all know
what?
No one's going to stop it.
Huh? How dare you predict such a thing happening?
Yeah,
oh, man, if he doesn't come off, I think it would be more surprising than if he does.
Right, yeah. But the weird thing is, that's the Hell in a Cell match that's, you know, a blood feud, but it's for no championship. And, of course, the other Hell in a Cell match is for the Universal Championship between Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman, you know, arguably the top two guys on Raw. Not arguably, definitely the top two guys on Raw. And would you really do a Reigns-Strowman cell match that's probably not leaving the cell after Jeff Hardy did some crazy shit? or should Hardy and Orton close the show then, if that's where they're going? You know that's where they're going.
That is an interesting problem. Because you can, I would think, do some type of ring implosion if you want to with Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns.
That you can do.
So that could be something that could top a Jeff Hardy complete bonkers crazy move, which is, pretty much guaranteed to happen.
You are right. I wasn't even thinking along those lines. That's a good call. They could do something like that if they so choose to, you know, have the championship match, you know, follow the non-championship cell match. You know, no, that is a good point. I mean, they have done 3 cell matches in the past at Hell in a Cell.
Oh.
But by the end, I think the years that they have done 3, it definitely ends up feeling, you know, overkill by
the third one
at the end of the night. Certainly, I think two is a good number, and I guess you can use Joe and Styles, but have it not be the. Because, you know, I don't think Joe and Styles will be there. So maybe it's better to not put it inside the cell just yet.
I would think that it not being in the cell is that's the biggest flag to me that they're not ending this feud no matter what happens in Hell in a Cell.
Right. I mean, they've already said that in Australia at the Super Showdown that, you know, Roman Reigns is not going to be defending his Universal Championship. It said the Shield will be in a 6-man tag. You could certainly stretch out Samoa Joe and AJ Styles to that show to at least give it some type of a major championship match. And you know, once again,
certainly
at some point, Joe. I don't know if they want to do another, you know, Nakamura type of deal where you get like three. you get two or three crappy decisions in a row before you finally get a clear winner. So, there's a pretty good chance that Samoa Joe is walking out of Hell in a Cell with that title.
It could be interesting to have. You know, I guess I assumed that AJ Styles was because has he wiped CM Punk off of the WWE Championship?
No. List no, yet? That is the only thing. Yes, and I was just thinking that. Yes, no, it will be until about mid-January before he essentially Royal Rumble time before Styles can eclipse that record, and they can call AJ Styles the longest reigning champion however long, 10, 15, 20 years. I have no idea. I don't know when the last obscenely long, you know, 12-month plus title reign really was.
Oh, right. Hey, yeah, I guess it'll be interesting to see how much they dislike CM Punk, because I'd love to see Samoa Joe with a title reign at some point. Like, they've done a great job with him, and he's really delivered in every feud, but he hasn't gone over really in any of his feuds. Like, that's kind of been one of the more impressive things about Samoa Joe, is that they've kept him a relevant killer, and he's really kind of come out on the bad side of the decision more times than not.
He has his the injuries that have caused him to take a lot of time off over the last, you know, year or so. But Samoa Joe, you know, he has seemingly always come back from those situations, you know, stronger than ever, and he certainly has this time. He's been on point completely. I mean, once again, this whole thing with Styles and Joe and Styles family. It's, you know, it started off rough. But there's still, as you point out, some logical flaws here. But in the end, right. it is a story people believe in. The matches between the two are, you know, essentially as strong as ever they've ever been. You know, it's a good feud to keep going on. But I'm with you. I think Joe could really benefit from a title reign of some length. You know, AJ Styles is a made man in WWE, and particularly on the SmackDown side of things.
Yeah, he does not have any
there
problems.
There really is no reason to have, and at this point, because you have such a strong, keep in mind, one of the reasons CM Punk's title reign was so long is because they felt that, they wanted to keep the belt away from Cena at that time because they were going to do the whole Cena Rock deal, and, you know, CM Punk was essentially defending his championship on the semi-main event of John Cena's main events for most of his title reign.
Yes.
You know, and you know, yeah. But, and, you know, there really wasn't a stronger idea in their book, you know, to take the title off of Punk sooner. With Styles now, they have this pretty hot heel in Samoa Joe. So there really is no reason, other reason than to keep this title on Styles all the way to January, other than pure sport. Of someone who hasn't worked for that company in nearly 5 years. And you've already set in motion events that caused him to lose his best friend and upwards of $1 million. So when is enough enough?
Well, they had Sting lose to Triple H, so enough is never enough in that company, as far as I can tell.
That's true.
So, yeah, it would not shock me. Their level of spite, because everyone has had their record broken. Like, it's a good thing that Randy Orton is still kind of a made man, because someone younger, getting someone else younger to win the championship is going to be a tough one. Since they erased Brock Lesnar's memory at some juncture with Orton. So yeah, I think they're pretty vindictive in that department. was there anything else on SmackDown that we didn't really touch on before moving to Raw? No? Okay.
I think we move on unless we want to talk about Naomi and the Iconics and this little tag team tournament, but I think we can move forward.
Yeah, especially since the tag team tournament thing's kind of weird anyway. I don't know why you don't end with a triple threat instead of starting with one, but that is neither here nor there really either. So I guess on Raw, you kind of mentioned them earlier as being the Hell in a Cell participants on the Raw side of things, and it obviously was not surprising that Roman Reigns would be involved in the Hell in a Cell on the Raw side.
No, that's not surprising at all. You know, I guess in the history of Money in the Bank cash-ins, this is, I think, something like maybe only the third time someone has ever actually, you know, called their shot, you know, in advance, you know, and an eye-to-eye, man-to-man situation. Very, you know, it was all well done. Once again, they are definitely in the get Roman Reigns cheered business through and through. You know what? And the thing is, this Roman Reigns, if he had been this Roman Reigns the whole time, these last 3+ years, we might be in a different situation, because he has been, you know, he's talking tough, he's talking cool, he's being a stand-up guy at every turn, you know, turning back any challenges, you know, looking everyone in the eye. Yeah, this Roman Reigns could have been the guy, you know, 3-some years ago. But that's not what happened, and he's still got a bit of a mountain to climb. But I do think that you know, if you fast forward through the actual main event of Raw with Reigns and Strowman teaming together after agreeing to have a Hell in a Cell match against each other to take on Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler. You know, that match, you know, once again, well done in the sense that, you know, it was 2-1 the whole time. You know, Reigns never tagged, never was able to get the tag, finally gets the tag. And this is something that Dave Meltzer pointed out that I definitely agreed with, is that, you know, if Strowman had just, you know, exploded on Roman Reigns to just destroy him, the people would have cheered wildly.
Oh, uh-huh.
But when he didn't answer the tag and just stood there and did nothing, that let the situation sink in that this is a man to be booed. It was kind of like a cowardly thing to do. Instead of, you know, a cool fun thing to do, you know, being destructive for Braun Strowman that gets him cheered all the time, that he's getting cheered when he was committing acts of attempted murder against Roman Reigns last year.
Well, and Kevin Owens earlier this year.
Right. At that point, Strowman was supposed to be something of a de facto baby. Although he'd never really officially turned babyface, he'd just been facing heels for most of the last. Probably most of the last year.
Yeah. Well, and that's the funny thing is that the solution to making Strowman a heel is a pretty easy one if you want to. Everything that he's done has been predicated on him just freaking out and being cool. Him walking away from the fights, like, they do that so often that, you know, there are times where I just groan about it. But with Braun Strowman doing it, it has way more impact because of what the destruction he has wreaked, really, in his whole run in the WWE at this point.
Yeah, and, you know, then when Strowman finally actually did get in the ring, you know, started attacking Roman Reigns, once again, still wasn't doing anything kind of cool or badass or ridiculous feat of strength. He was yelling at him. He headbutted him. He threw him into the turnbuckles. And then, you know, at first, you know, McIntyre and Ziggler are still in the ring. You don't know why they're still in the ring. You know, once again, if there was going to be any ambiguity at all, you know, Strowman would have attacked them too. But instead, he starts directing traffic, and, you know, with obviously very clear heels, Ziggler and McIntyre, you know, joining in on the beatdown of Reigns. Then, of course, Ambrose and Rollins caught off guard, you know, not in their tactical gear. Not in their tactical gear, which of course made all the difference.
Well, hey, I mean, it's just like if you're a demon or you're not a demon.
Right.
It makes all the difference.
But no, once again, it was... Yeah, no, it was good. If you're going to go down this road, you're going to, you know, kind of force the Roman Reigns as a babyface, Braun Strowman as a heel narrative going into Hell in a Cell, this is the way to do it. You know, if they had done something on the lines of a Wyatt family reunion, the crowd would have popped for that.
Oh.
So, putting him, it's an odd fit, but putting him with, you know, clear heels like Ziggler and McIntyre, especially someone as smarmy and unlikable as Dolph Ziggler, will get him, once again, booed more by proxy. And putting him with the Shield will, the entire collective of the Shield will get him more booed.
Yeah, it does seem to be the way to go, honestly, is it in most logical terms.
Right,
for the WWE.
And, and of course, in doing the cell match for the title, it's a great idea, while also, you know, giving the show in Australia on October 6th, the hook of the, which, now there's a lot of TV between now and then, but that really should be the first time on TV the Shield team up. At this point, if we're going to go there, they've already announced the match. So,
right.
You know, making that be the first time, you know, the Shield, you know, teams up in a big match. So, you know, that's a good thing. Yeah, we talked for a while. We pretty much talked all year about the prospect of Braun Strowman being the one to beat Brock Lesnar and then be champion as a babyface, and the problems therein of having a monster babyface as your champion.
Right.
Well, now they don't have that problem. Strowman ends up winning the title after all.
Yeah, this is true. I still don't think the Roman Reigns reign is gonna last a short while, so I have my doubts on that front.
Oh, I don't either, especially now that the briefcase has been taken out of circulation, and it's just gonna be a man to man battle in the cell. Yeah. Although, I did quite note that the interesting way that they did make a point of Strowman handing the briefcase to Baron Corbin and saying, here's the briefcase, bring it to Hell in a Cell. You know, the briefcase is now in the possession of Baron Corbin. So I wonder if he can, you know, he can say that, you know, that wasn't a match for the briefcase. Braun Strowman had earned that championship match, and I granted it to him. He gave me the briefcase. Although, my God, Universal Champion Baron Corbin is a reality I don't think I can face. Oh my God! Oh.
Yeah. If
he was a very overbearing and unbearable an unbearable figure throughout that show. This GM run is not going to be entertaining for me to watch at all.
Yeah, it's honestly to the point where I'm like, oh, man, this guy just... I kind of enjoy him being this much of a dick.
Yeah.
I really, really have a problem with the heel GM thing. If they keep it limited as far as how long, how many months they do this, or even if it's just a couple of weeks, I think it can work out. Or if they have, you know, the yin and yang with him and Kurt Angle kind of counteracting each other, it can work.
I mean, as long as the end game is, you know, building up to some kind of a big confrontation with Kurt Angle, and you know that does end with Kurt getting his job back, I think it won't be too bad. But again, as you said, the whole GM thing is so played out, and Corbin certainly is no Vince McMahon. Let's just say that. So
no, but I do feel like they've gotten his voice over a little bit better at this juncture. I just think that his personality is more out there than it was. And it was certainly something that they were lacking with him.
Right. I mean, he definitely gets a lot of heat. But the question will be going forward, is it the good kind of heat that you want to see him get his ass kicked and Kurt Angle get his job back, or is it change the channel type of heat? And to me, I think he between him being in multiple segments plus wrestling a fairly long, not exciting match with Finn Balor in the feud that just refuses to die, that definitely left me closer to the bad heat, you know, side of things.
That one left me more for the bad booking thing, because, you know, Corbin did do pulled a dick move basically to win the match, but the fact that the announcers had to pretend like Finn Balor didn't know how to wrestle Baron Corbin after wrestling him like a half a dozen times in the last month, I was just shaking my head.
Yeah, I mean, in the ring, I do feel like Corbin was progressing. But man, after about the third chin lock, I'm just like, oh my, he just doesn't have anything. And they keep putting him in these long matches.
Well, that's where I say that to me, it's a consistency thing, is what his issue is. Like, because I feel like he's had some good long matches, and even ones with Finn Balor. I don't understand what kind of happened with this week's match.
Right, no, I mean,
you know, to compare it side by side with the more successful ones.
I mean, it was a slow, boring match. I mean, picked up when Finn was on offense, but then, yeah, you know, they ran the finish. They ran to give Corbin the victory. I mean, obviously, it's an underhanded finish. But no, I mean, I think everyone's, even if you're not so anti-Corbin, I think this is a feud that could be put to bed, but doesn't seem to be.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it's going to roll on to Hell in a Cell, for better or for worse.
Right.
As far as Raw goes, I guess I was trying to think of the ladies' situation over on Raw. And I guess it keeps on being kind of interesting that Brie Bella is popping up more on Raw than SmackDown. But I do like the way that they're using them. Well, to continue to be a buffer for having Ronda Rousey in the ring too frequently.
Yeah. No, I kind of agree with that. Again, I think we all kind of figured that out, that, you know, the Bellas were going to be brought back for Revolution. I mean, it's fine. I mean, having Brie on both shows without much explanation, you know, after you know, 2 years of, with the exception of Cena, let's just say enforcing strong borders. You know, it's a little weird that, you know, of all people, Brie Bella gets to
float between shows.
Gets to hop shows, but no, I mean, it's good to have the Bellas back. Having them wrestle together for the first time in years next week will be, you know, it's a pretty good hook for a holiday episode of Raw that, you know, where it's just natural that the ratings will go down during. You know, obviously they will both play a role in Evolution. They're also both, you know, they've already announced the match for Superstar Showdown and Super Showdown or whatever, Super Showdown. In Australia, where the Bellas will team with Ronda Rousey against the Riot Squad, you know, which is a good little match. It's something that, you know, it's a kind of a unique situation, because the Bellas are probably the most, other than, well, exception of Rousey, kind of the most mainstream stars on the women's side. So had to have them team with Rousey for the first time ever. It's a good deal. Plus, it keeps Rousey from having the three title defenses in 6 weeks, which would be overkill, considering we're already going to at some point get where Ronda Rousey wrestling is going to become a going to start feeling like a normal thing, which may or may not be to her benefit, but she seems to be very game to wrestle as much as possible, and they seem to have also, you know, specifically signed her to a full-time deal, you know, not a Brock Lesnar type of contract.
Right.
For a show like what's, you know, coming up in Australia to do, you know, some kind of unique matches, more tag matches, you know, that's fine. I mean, it's kind of a show. I mean, they're pushing it hard, but at the same time, it's also, you know, a show that's being built for the live audience, to 70,000 people or so into a stadium in Australia, you know, that just happens to also be airing on the WWE Network at the same time, as opposed to a network special or pay-per-view that is just happens to be taking place in an arena.
It's just like the greatest Royal Rumble. They're right, just trying to put as many names in there as they can, so that everyone can cheer their favorite. But they're not gonna, you know, other than, like you said, like one or two feuds, maybe AJ Styles and Samoa Joe sneaks on there. Maybe something else sneaks on there, but for the most part, it's going to be a lot of multi-person matches so that everyone gets their fill because they don't go to Australia frequently.
Right. That's what it is. I mean, Tim just said, the Bellas do add some of the show, even though a certain segment of the fan base sees them as a relic from the bad Diva days and seems to have a knee-jerk reaction to boo them when they're on screen together. Although, cheer Brie when she's with her husband, Daniel Bryan, which is amusing.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And, you know, once again, at some point, you can always turn Nikki heel if you need to as well.
Yeah, I don't think that's really really necessary. But, yeah, we shall see. And, because did Alexa Bliss declare her rematch for Hell in a Cell with Rousey?
Yes. They're doing Alexa Bliss and Ronda Rousey again. Which, you know, kind of like what they did with Charlotte and Carmella tonight. I mean, it's just, you know, one match to get, you know, Alexa Bliss's, you know, contractually obligated rematch out of the way.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't expect a lot from it.
I don't expect her to move down the card as much as Carmella. She will not be in the title picture, I do not think. But, you know, I do think that her place in the company is... I don't want to say it's tenuous for Carmella, because she's definitely sticking around, but they clearly have had as much faith in Alexa Bliss as they have had in Charlotte. I'll put it that way.
Oh, yeah. They definitely have a lot of faith in her. I mean, she's getting the Trish Stratus match at Evolution, which they did take the time to promote. You know, that was Trish Stratus was a pleasant surprise. I mean, she, you know, her back and forth with Elias was good. Man, was that parting shot about her being 60 in her 60s age. That was just mean.
That's one where
I'm sure
just
it was
like,
thought was funny, but it's so hypocritical of people in WWE to, you know, be okay with stuff like that in house, but, you know, something happens out of the house.
It's not cool.
House, like the Dave Meltzer situation a couple weeks back. Yeah, you know. Then there's all that company wide solidarity saying this is wrong.
It's a very good point to make. Although it's also equally obvious that it's completely ridiculous. Statement to be making when she clearly is not of that age.
Right. No. It was something tongue in cheek. You know, said, you know, she got the last laugh. And although I didn't think for a second that maybe they were actually going to have Elias take some bumps for Rousey, but they got him out of the ring before she made it down there. I liked how they handled those two segments with Trish Stratus out there. Oh. You know, once again, they tied a lot of points together with the Alexa Bliss Ronda Rousey feud, Alexa Bliss and Trish Stratus as a match coming up. the history between Mickie James and Trish Stratus, and then also giving Natalya a big win in Canada to honor her father. So they accomplished a lot in that 20 minutes. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I'm kind of shocked that someone got to win in their home country.
Home country.
Yeah, well, I mean, they lose track of geography once they're out of the United States. It just matters about countries at that point, and not like Kevin Owens aptly pointed out that countries can have their own divisions.
Oh, they can. Oh, and that was really good. Yeah, Kevin Owens was excellent there. Yeah, you kind of felt that you saw it coming with him turning on the fans and you know, playing up that being from Montreal, because you know, Toronto, Montreal, there's historical rivalries there. There's hockey rivalries there. There's baseball rivalries there.
Well, yeah, the baseball one isn't going so much anymore, but...
For what?
The baseball one isn't going so much anymore.
I just kind of threw that out there. I have no idea if they even play each other once a season or not.
Well, Montreal doesn't have a team at the current moment.
Oh, they don't?
They have been in Washington for quite some time at this juncture.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Now I remember. Yeah. Oh, silly me. But the point still stands that you know, people from Toronto and Montreal, you know, Canada's two biggest cities.
Yeah.
They hate each other.
Yeah, there's a rivalry there. So it worked out.
That worked out. I mean, what really worked out was the Seth Rollins Kevin Owens match. Excellent TV match. Probably the best on Raw in a little while here. Seth Rollins, getting the win to cap off Kevin Owens' terrible summer. Really terrible year, because he's really essentially accomplished no objectives in 2018 at all. Starting the year with, having 2-on-1 matches against AJ Styles with the championship on the line, but still losing. Getting beat at WrestleMania. Being in limbo, and then getting signed to Raw, and then pretty much spending his entire time on Raw being a tackling dummy for Braun Strowman, and then finally failing to win the Intercontinental title. I do think that they played it up just right. You know, the moment that he would finally snap and quit.
And he's certainly the type of character that would do something like that. And it's also was not surprising to me that Stephanie would at least play an on-the-phone role in the ongoing Kevin Owens storyline that is sure to come.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully they play this better than the Dolph Ziggler quit SmackDown angle towards the end of last year that went nowhere. I don't know if Owens will be gone for long, but there should definitely be a major, reason for him to come back. Something that totally rejuvenates him. The Raw side of things absolutely needs him to be a heel, because they're still even after turning Strowman back, that there's still a shortage of good heels on Raw. So, hopefully they can bring Owens back in a situation where maybe they can cut down on some of the comedy and start having him be taken more seriously again as a threat.
If he's brought back in that Dean Ambrose type of mold, where they've cut out some of the antics and just made him a little bit more of a badass, and they've definitely established certain aspects of that for Owens far more than they ever did for Ambrose, honestly.
Yeah, they did. Ambrose has definitely come back, you know, completely serious, more crazy than, more intense crazy than wacky crazy. He's, you know, there's been no, when they first did the skit with him and Jinder Mahal, I kind of was like, ugh, I just kind of groaned, but he still played it into, you know, turned it, instead of saying a bunch of silly things, he turned it into violent threats. Nope, that was good. I mean, a match with Jinder Mahal is only gonna be so good. But once again, you know, Ambrose showed intensity. He won a match. As far as why I wasn't paying attention, he still has not done that rebound lariat since coming back at all. Which that's definitely a move I would glad to see retired, or him maybe only busted out every once in a while, because if he does it in every match, and you should be on the lookout for it in every match, why don't you just kick him in the face?
Yeah, that always seems like one that was a hard sell for me, just in general. Just because you can see it coming for the most part, and the opponent who 90% of the time when the move happens has the upper hand, it gets kind of awkward to pretend like you're being surprised by,
I mean, there,
something you just committed.
I mean, I think when he first started doing it was good, because I don't think he did it in every match. And, you know, there are other guys who pulled it off, but I just feel like, especially Dean Ambrose's version, he just wasn't fast enough to pull it off, like, as a lightning-quick move. It was like he took his time to get tangled up in the ropes and bounce off, and then come off with a clothesline.
Gotcha. If those are additional problems that I hadn't really thought about, honestly, I just always thought that it was just too easy to get out of. And maybe if it was sped up some, it would it'd make a little more sense. Oh, man.
Right.
Well, is there anything else to get to on the Raw bracket side of things? Because there's 3 hours of material, and, you know, we caught a lot of it.
I think we did. I'm trying to think of anything else of like, importance. And, I think we've gone to the Raw well enough.
I guess we can end by saying, obviously, you and I, along with, some other, cohorts, will be attending All In this weekend. This was not ever intended to be the preview for that show. That will take place when, as Chris so, aptly points out, he goes to meet men, that he met on the internet.
I have never made any of these other kind of trips. I've never made a WrestleMania trip. I've always made excuses, or, you know, I don't want to say got scared, but kind of just like, I hadn't thought about it, and then never made any of these trips. It's like first time that you and I will, Friday will be the first time you and I ever meet. And yes, it will be the first. I believe we are planning to do two podcasts in person from our hotel room.
From
various other locales, possibly.
Yeah, we will see what the wild of Western Chicago, aka Schaumburg, provides for us in that department.
I'm pretty excited about it. It should be a good weekend. We'll definitely have not just wrestling, but we'll get some beer reporting in there for anyone who would be visiting the Chicagoland area. You know, again, they're gonna
Yeah, I always feel like there's a reason.
Drink some cold beer, have some good food, and watch some wrestling.
That's what all of it. A lot of my choices revolve around the location at which a said wrestling event is taking place. These days, New Orleans is to me quite irresistible. Chicago, it definitely helps that it is within driving distance. For yours truly, so that definitely makes it a destination. And I think I've mentioned this too. I think it was on a show with Shahid. It always helps to be able to plan for an event like this, whether it is WrestleMania or something. It's just like, you know that it's a chosen time. You can get the tickets ahead of time. That is one of the biggest things that helped about this event, was just the pre-planning of it. Because, yeah, life is crazy, and it's hard to make trips at the last minute.
Right. No, we definitely planned this out, although, I think we definitely need to appreciate how close we came to not getting tickets. Because by the time, we're going to be in the cheap seats, no question about it.
Yeah.
I was right there when the tickets went on sale.
Thing about that, though. Like, I guess I'm not too concerned, because it's a 10,000 seat arena. We are not stuck. I would go with the locals here, whether it's Schottenstein or Nationwide Arena. You are not going to be in the boonies of the top of those 16,000 seat arenas, which are quite a bit bigger.
It's a 10,000 seat arena, mostly used for minor league hockey and basketball. From the looks of it, doesn't really get, this might be one of the bigger, traveling shows that it's ever gotten. it doesn't seem like it gets, too many, obviously with the Allstate Arena, pretty much, around the block, practically, you'd say, and then
right.
United Center and other various stadiums and music clubs, it doesn't get the big concerts.
Well, yeah, because that's kind of an odd venue size in a lot of ways. Like, it seems like people either go like 5,000 or lower, or you're talking, a regular arena that seats 15,000+.
So definitely, it's, once again, with Allstate, in Rosemont so close, it's kind of an odd arena to exist. Why don't these minor league teams just play in,
those other arenas?
which already has to compete with the United Center in Chicago proper to get, big name acts. Although WWE is a big name act that chooses to use the Allstate Arena, likely because it's cheaper. It's probably cheaper to run, and they still do 15,000+ people every time they go there.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think about that. Is that they use the older of the two arenas? Yeah.
Right.
But I guess I do suppose I look forward to a Chicago crowd, because even for the smaller Ring of Honor crowds, those are pretty good. I would imagine that a solid group of natives will be around the event this weekend.
I would hope so. Man, some of those people who travel from all over, oh boy.
Yep,
if it's more of like a traveling WrestleMania crowd or night after WrestleMania crowd, I might get annoyed quickly, but I think I'll be able to control myself. I'm not sure about Steve.
Well, but we will not speak for those who are not on the podcast. So let's really wrap this thing up for all future All In shenanigans. Follow either at DeFrango11 or at Chris Calamita. Definitely follow the brand at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. And with that, have a good night.
Yep. Be on the lookout all weekend. We should be posting two shows Saturday and Sunday. Good night, everybody.